Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the increasingly important White House role of Stephen Bannon, who successfully challenged the Secretary of State's argument that Iran is sticking to the deal made with Obama, which makes it likely that in 90 days Trump will pull out of the G5 plus one agreement with Iran. Joshua Green, a senior national correspondent for Bloomberg Businessweek and author of the new book Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency, joins us to discuss the deep right-wing Catholic fervor driving Bannon's apocalyptic worldview that appears to go back to the 11th century crusades of the Crescent versus the Cross. We will look into the key role of Rebecca Mercer, who brought Bannon and Kellyanne Conway in to rescue Trump's flagging campaign, and what the Mercers expect to get in exchange for being the biggest donors to both Bannon and Trump. Then we will speak with Thomas Nichols, a professor of national security affairs in the National Security Affairs Department of the Naval War College and author of the new book, The Death of Expertise, The Campaign Against Established Knowledge and Why It Matters. He joins us to discuss his belief that, quote, the abysmal literacy, both political and general, of the American public is the foundation for all of these problems. It is the soil in which all of the other dysfunctions have taken root and prospered, with the 2016 election only its most recent expression. Then finally, we'll get an assessment of the new Democratic agenda, the Better Deal, announced by Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, that aims to rebuild the coalition that FDR put together and bring the white working class back into the Democrats' big tent. Dean Baker, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, joins us to discuss Schumer's implicit criticism of Hillary Clinton's campaign and the promising antitrust measures in the plan that hopes to reclaim the Democrats' populist mantle that Trump was able to expropriate in the last election. And joining us now, Joshua Green, a national correspondent for Bloomberg Businessweek, focusing on political coverage for the magazine and Bloomberg News. Previously, he was a senior editor of The Atlantic, a weekly political columnist for the Boston Globe, and an editor at The Washington Monthly. His latest book just out is Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. Welcome to Background Briefing, Joshua Green.
Thank you.
It seems that Stephen Bannon, the subject of your book, Devil's Bargain, is stronger than ever in terms of these constant rumors about who's up and who's down in the White House. Apparently, the meeting that with Tillerson on reauthorizing the Iran agreement, which Trump doesn't like in the first place and campaigned against, didn't go well for Tillerson. And basically, Bannon and Sebastian Gorka won the argument, and in probably in 90 days from now, when it's up for recertification, Trump will decertify the deal. So is that your understanding, that Stephen Bannon is stronger than ever, more influential than ever?
Well, I think he's certainly come back from, you know, he was almost fired back in March. He had such a high profile, and you know, the idea in the popular culture was that it was Bannon pulling the puppet strings and running the White House. And that was such a prominent public theme that I think Trump became enraged and kind of pushed him off the side. But yes, I think he has clawed his way back. And because Trump has been distracted with the Russia scandal and is focusing all his ire on his Attorney General Jeff Sessions, that Bannon has moved back into something approximating the power and position that he held at the beginning of the administration. And I think for a lot of people, that's a very worrisome development.
And how much does his personal grudge about his service in the Navy in the Gulf at the time of Jimmy Carter's ill-fated Desert One mission to save the American hostages, does that influence his hawkish view on Iran?
Absolutely. I mean, I consider this, and I tell the story in Devil's Bargain, I consider this the radicalizing moment, the moment that Steve Bannon became convinced that Islam posed a existential threat to the Judeo-Christian West. And I tell the story in how, you know, he's raised in a democratic blue-collar Irish Catholic family, served aboard a Navy destroyer, and wound up in the Persian Gulf during the Iranian hostage crisis. And Bannon describes to me basically how he viewed Muslims, how he viewed the Middle East. And he talks about stepping off the ship and feeling as if he'd been transported back to the 5th century. He said that Muslims and the people that he encountered in Pakistan and Iran were primeval. And if you flash forward 20 years to September 11th, I think that that fired those views even further, because here were these same hostile forces that had reached all the way to Wall Street, where Bannon was working, and attacked America there. So I think that that is absolutely an issue and a threat that Bannon has seized on in a way that is having some pretty profound effects on our foreign policy and our national security.
But there's no subtlety, is there, here, and consistency? I mean, as much as he hates the Muslim immigration, which, of course, we saw go into Europe but from Syria, but that was provoked in large part by Russia's entry into Syria and Assad and what the NATO commander referred to as the weaponization of refugees. Here they are, on the one hand, supporting Putin, or at least playing footsie with him. On the other hand, Putin is deliberately flooding Europe with refugees to destabilize Western Europe.
I think Bannon believes that, and I think that he believes that, left to their own devices, the Democrats would allow that to happen too. And one big fear I know Bannon has is that a lot of these refugees from Syria and elsewhere who flooded into places like Germany will soon be able to travel from there to the United States. I mean, this is a threat that he sifts and dwells on, and I think it's one reason why you have a figure like Steve Bannon with no national security background at all in these meetings, going head-to-head with people like the Secretary of State, Tillerson, or some of these generals. I mean, Bannon, I think at heart, is an isolationist who doesn't want to be fighting these foreign wars, and feels as though other people around Trump really do want to go to war, not just in Afghanistan and Iraq, but want regime change in Syria. So this is one of the many pitched battles that are being fought in the Trump White House right now.
But are they naive about Russia, Bannon and company, in the sense that, you know, there's a rumor that his attraction to Putin, that Russia is the last great white hope of white nationalism against the Muslim hordes. And you, as you point out in your book, Joshua Green, Devil's Bargain, he grew up with this kind of cross versus crescent, almost, you know, going back to the Crusades in terms of his conservative Catholicism worldview. I mean, it's pretty hard not to notice that Putin doesn't have America's interests at heart.
I think Bannon would agree with a lot of that, although I don't think that he would consider it white nationalism or white supremacy. Bannon is motivated primarily by religion, I think, and he has a distinct set of beliefs and worldviews that are very odd and very rare. He believes in something called primordial traditionalism, the belief based on an early 20th century French metaphysician named René Guénon, who practiced occultism and Freemasonry and eventually became a Sufi Muslim and followed the Sharia. This is Bannon's intellectual godfather, and he's someone who influenced people like Julius Evola, who was Mussolini's racial theorist and later moved to Nazi Germany. But at the heart of Guignon's traditionalism is the belief that essentially man's connection to the transcendent was lost after the Enlightenment. The rise of modernity has severed our connection to God, and that we are really in the midst of a 6,000-year-long dark age. Bannon believes this. And the other prominent traditionalist in the world, Guignonian traditionalist with a position of power, is a man named Alexander Dugin, who is Vladimir Putin's chief ideologist. He, too, believes that man has lost its connection to the transcendent and wants to institute, along with Bannon, a kind of restoration of what they consider to be traditional values. Dugin formulated this version of it called Eurasianism, that's all about, you know, tradition, and puts the Russian story at the center. I think Bannon's is a slightly different version, but one of the reasons why he wants to destroy the EU and shut down immigrations and fight back against the threat he perceives from radical Islam, is that he really does think the world is coming to an end. And so there is a certain common cause there with Russia. But I don't think that unless you read the book and understand Bannon's religious views, that you can fully grasp exactly what that ideological connection is.
And what about the other Putin advisor, Surkov, who's the famous political technologist, as the Russians call them, who created this whole media skill on the part of Putin, which it seems that the Trump people have borrowed, where, to quote an author of Surkov, nothing is true and everything is possible?
Well, I think that the Russian propagandist that Bannon most admires is actually a much older one, Sergei Eisenstein. I mean, he has told me that he's studied Eisenstein's career, his propaganda movies, you know, these famous old propaganda movies from the 1920s like Battleship Potemkin, and believes Leni Riefenstahl, the famous Nazi propagandist. He studied these people and believes that he can imitate what they do, that he can kind of move the masses through imagery. You see that some of that in Trump's speeches. You can also see it in Bannon's films. He's a filmmaker before he ever came on the political scene. And there are clear homages to some of these radical filmmakers. I think that's where Bannon is looking to, not to Putin, but to a much earlier period in Russia.
And again, I'm speaking with Joshua Green, a senior national correspondent for Bloomberg Business Week, focusing on political coverage for the magazine and Bloomberg News. Previously, he was a senior editor of The Atlantic, a weekly political columnist for the Boston Globe, and an editor of the Washington Monthly. And his latest book just out is Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. But in terms of his film career, which is by no measure successful, can you make analogies with, for example, Ayn Rand, who was not a very successful screenwriter in Hollywood, and she had this bitterness towards the Hollywood liberal establishment because they were the ones that get the talented ones who got the work. And, you know, she behind the scenes, she helped gin up the House of Un-American Activities. So is there any connection there? Because we're familiar with the way that conservatives in Hollywood feel bitter about the kind of cultural hegemony of the liberals.
I think that I don't think Bannon is a Randian conservative in the sense that he just has a different brand. It's more populist, but certainly the bitterness against the secular liberal culture is something that drives him. Partly, again, going back to his religious views, that he feels that the West is losing its connection to God, to the transcendent, because of the rise of liberal secular culture. And if you go back and look at Breitbart News, I think it's most notorious for some of the articles and headlines it's run that tend to focus on things like anti-Semitism and race, but it's really religion in the destruction of traditional culture, which is the issue that animates Steve Bannon. And you can find those stories in Breitbart News, too. I mean, this is something he's been writing and thinking and agitating about for a long time.
But is he, he seems more of a nihilist and a destroyer and a bomb thrower, as he's often referred to. And you call, you know, the subtitle is Storming the Presidency of your book, Devil's Bargain, Joshua Green. So it seems to me the question would be then, what does he stand for? We know that he wants to tear down the administrative state, etc. What does he want to build up?
I think what he would like to do is tear down a large part of the government, what he calls the administrative state, shut the borders, take away foreign aid, isolate America, bring armies back. He's very much a Lindbergh-style isolationist, I think, and return religion, traditional religion in particular, to the center of American life. If Bannon were uninhibited, that is what he would do. I don't know that that's what Trump would do, but that is what Bannon would like to do.
But when you say in your book that his experience on Wall Street at Goldman Sachs led him to feel that the Wall Street is a casino that taxpayers have to bail out, how does that gel with the idea that if you get rid of regulations, all that's going to do is empower the plutocracy and monopoly capitalism?
Well, the answer is Bannon has a very odd view of Wall Street, of the financial crisis. You know, there's a strain of thinking among people like Michael Lewis, the financial writer, that back in the 1980s, when a lot of these big banks were partnerships and partners had their own money on the line, they were governed a little bit more responsibly, and that the place where they went wrong is when they became public companies and they could privatize gains, socialize their losses, and of course would have these giant bailouts from the government if they ever got in trouble. I originally thought that that was the view that Bannon held, but I watched one of his films called Generation Zero. It's Bannon's analysis of the roots of the financial crisis. It's a bizarre film, but it posits or it makes two claims. One, that Bannon is a big believer in the Hindu concept of cyclical time, that the country and the globe, that mankind, that we pass through these eras of awakening and crisis. And one big theme in the film, and this is a theme in Bannon's own religious beliefs, is that we're in the midst of decline, of this dark age headed toward an apocalypse. The other theme in Bannon's movie is that, yes, there was this terrible financial crisis, but the fault wasn't really the banks. The fault was liberals, that what happened in Bannon's telling was that the rise of an anything-goes liberal culture in the 1960s and the 1970s cost us our collective respect for tradition, for good behavior, for rules, and that manifested itself most clearly on Wall Street, where you had these greedy bankers bankrupting big banks, small-time investors. And so Bannon manages to place the blame for all this on liberals and liberal social mores rather than on right-wing economics. And therefore, his solution to the problem is not to impose regulation. It's to try and give rise to a religious revival that will instill in people, imbue them with the kind of behavior he thinks that they need. So the regulations, in a sense, in Bannon's belief, would come from God, not from government.
Just in the last minute, Rebecca Mercer obviously put the deal together with both Bannon and Kellyanne Conway, a hugely important player here. What do the Mercers want out of this presidency?
Control and influence. And I think the Mercers are one of the most important elements of the Trump-Bannon story that are not really well known because they're so secretive. But the Mercers, as I describe in the book, were essentially the merchant bankers for Steve Bannon and for Donald Trump in the years before the presidential election, and are responsible. Their money is directly responsible for all of these interlocking outfits that together tore down Hillary Clinton, got Donald Trump elected, and put Steve Bannon, who they paid millions of dollars to over the years, directly into the West Wing as a chief strategist for Donald Trump. They have influence, the Mercers do, and that is what they want.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Joshua Green.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Joshua Green, a senior national correspondent for Bloomberg Businessweek, focusing on political coverage for the magazine and Bloomberg News. Previously, he was a senior editor of The Atlantic, a weekly political columnist for the Boston Globe, and an editor at The Washington Monthly. His latest book just out is Devil's Bargain, Stephen Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency.